So why do we die? I don't mean heart disease or cancer or stepping in front of a bus. I mean, how come we have to die? If you were making this up, would you make it up that you died? I mean, think about it. You get born, that's pretty traumatic. And then you got to do the diaper thing. And then you just start having fun and they ship you off to school. And you're in school for what? 12, 16, 24 years. And they finally get out and they put you to work. And you work for 40 years. And now finally you can start having fun and you die. I mean, what's going on here? Maybe we're not doing something we should be doing. What if we hung lots of crystals in the windows and they're doing that in California and they're still dying. Maybe we're doing something we shouldn't be doing. Do you realize that approximately 94% of the people that ever ate food are now dead? So, no, I don't think that's going to work either. Well, one thing's for sure, if you don't get born, you don't die. And if you get born, looks like sooner or later you wind up dead. So this only raises the question, why bother being born? I mean, being born's a popular thing to do, like everybody I know did it. Birds do it, bees do it, right? It would appear that Mother Nature has this urge to become. And this urge to become, this becoming, leads to birth, which eventually leads to death. So, where does this becoming come from? Well, think about this building. It didn't used to be a building, right? There was a pile of wood and bricks and glass and metal, probably over there in the parking lot. And then they put all the pieces together, and the pieces fitting together, clinging together, it became a building. So this clinging seems to be necessary for something to become, right? So where does clinging come from? Why does that arise? Well, what do you cling to? Suppose you had a pair of socks and they had holes in them and somebody said, hey, can I have those socks? You're like, sure, right? You don't care. You get a nice new iPhone. Somebody says, hey, can I have your iPhone? Like, no, right? It's a good thing. It's something that's really desirable. It's something you crave, right? So the stuff we cling to is the good stuff, the stuff that we crave. So what do you crave? I don't know, chocolate ice cream, right? So it's very nice. It's got this pleasant taste to it, right? The craving isn't because of the color, and it's not because it comes in a cardboard carton. It's because it tastes good, right? It produces pleasant vedana, right? If you bought ice cream and you just put it there in a bowl and let it melt, yeah, that wouldn't be worth the money. It's the vedana that you get when you eat it, right? So there's contact when the ice cream hits the tongue, and that produces the vedana. And then if you're not careful, the vedana leads to craving and clinging and becoming and birth and death. So where does this contact come from? Well, you left your senses turned on, right? You're sitting here meditating away and the bell rings and you left your ears turned on, and so you hear the bell and you hear the people coming and going, and if you're not careful, you get upset about that, right? And you sort of got to open your eyes to see where you're going, and you're going to get sense contacts for that, right? Because we have senses, there are the sense contacts. And the sense contacts produce vedana, which unless you're careful could produce craving, clinging, becoming, birth, death. So what about these senses? Well, they're part of being human, of having a mind and a body. If you had a mind and body without senses, well, that'd be pretty senseless. It wouldn't last very long. So having a mind and body, it just sort of means you're going to need to have senses. And of course, they're going to get contacts and experience Vedana. And there'll be craving, clinging, becoming, birth, and death. So what about this mind and body? Well, it appears that your mind and body doesn't work very well unless it's conscious. If you have a mind and body, but it's not conscious, and it stays like that, yeah, it winds up dead pretty soon, unless you force feed it or something, right? But to have a functioning mind and body, it needs to be conscious. And it's going to have senses, and they're going to get sense contacts, and that's going to produce Vedana, and if you're not careful, craving, clinging, becoming, birth, death. All right, consciousness. Where does that come from? Well, it would appear that consciousness arises due to the interaction of mind and body. All right? So it's like, mind and body is dependent on consciousness, and consciousness is dependent on mind and body. Think of two sheaves of wheat leaning against each other. They support each other. You pull away one, and the other one falls over as well. So mutual dependence between consciousness and mind and body is going to give you a functioning being that's going to have senses. Those senses are going to get sense contacts. The sense contacts are inevitably going to produce some Vedana. And if you're not careful, there'll be craving for the pleasant and craving to get rid of the unpleasant. And that craving could lead to clinging, becoming, birth, old age, sickness, death, pain, sorrow, grief, lamentation, despair, and all the rest of the dukkha. This is the Buddha's teaching on dependent origination, paticca-samuppada. Remember back to the first night when I was talking about the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path? Before that, I talked about how the Buddha left home, and then when he woke up, he was reluctant to teach because he said, it's difficult for this generation, which is addicted to their lifestyle, to see this, that conditionality, dependent origination. Okay? In some of the suttas, dependent origination is extremely important. In fact, in Majjhima Middle Link saying, I believe it's number 28, Sariputta, the Buddha's chief disciple, says, quoting the Buddha, one who sees dependent origination sees the Dharma. One who sees the Dharma sees dependent origination. It's really the essence of what's going on. There are, as I said, a lot of suttas on dependent origination. In the connected discourses, the Samyutta Nikaya, there are 56 different topics that are discussed in there, and there's suttas on each of these topics. And in book 12, the topic is dependent origination, and there's something like 95 suttas there. Sutta 65 in Book 12 of the Samyutta Nikaya is entitled The City. And in that sutta, the Buddha says that he discovered this dependent origination as part of his awakening. Until he had a sense of dependent origination, he couldn't call himself fully awakened. You can see this happening. This guy, he sat down under this tree, and he's going to sit there until he figures it out or the flesh rots from his bones, right? Now, what's the major problem in the world today? Death. Right? So why do we die? Well, because we're born. That's what he figured out. Of course, that didn't solve the problem. So he didn't stop there. He just kept going, looking at becoming and clinging and craving and the Vedana and the sense contacts. And the mind and body, and the senses, and the mind and body, and consciousness. And he said when he understood this, he realized he hadn't found something new that all of those who had gone before him, who had awakened, had found the same thing. It was like he had stumbled on an ancient path and followed that path and found something really valuable. He gives the simile of a man wandering in the jungle who comes across an ancient path and follows it to a city. And then he goes back. The city is a ruined city. It's overgrown. He goes back and he tells the king or a king's minister about what he's found and says, rehabilitate that city, make it great again. And that king or king's minister indeed clears the path and makes the city great again. And he says, that's what I'm doing. This is not something new. This is something that's always been there, but it was overgrown. And now he's clearing it away, this path dependent on dependent origination, and it leads not to a city, but to the end of dukkha. And in that sutta, what's laid out are the 10 links of dependent origination, just like I laid them out for you in the opening of the talk. Now, when we look in the suttas, we find quite a few different ways that dependent origination is presented. We find the 10-link model I just talked about. You find 9 links, 11 links, 7 links. The most common one is there's 12 links, 12 items. It adds 2 more before you get to consciousness. The first of the links, the first item, is ignorance. And then is added sankharas, or we could say fabrications or concoctions, and then consciousness being dependent on that. The most famous depiction of dependent origination is the Tibetan Wheel of Life. You sometimes see that on the tankas. Sometimes you see a poster of it. What it shows is Yama, the Lord of Death, holding a wheel, a circle. You can see his fangs up at 12 o'clock and his claws at 10 and 2 o'clock. And his other claws down at 5 and 7, and his tail swishing back and forth at 6 o'clock. And on the circle are a number of concentric rings, like a bullseye, all right, a target. In the bullseye position, there is a rooster, a pig, and a snake, each biting the tail of the other. The rooster is greed, the snake is hatred, and the pig is delusion. On the ring around that, you have people coming out of states of woe, things are going bad, and coming into very good states, and then falling back into states of woe, samsara, the cycle of, yeah, it's good, no, it's not good, yeah, it's good, no, it's not good. You might have run into that at some point. Outside of that is where the artist has the most fun, because that depicts the 6 realms of existence. Down at the bottom, at the lowest realm, is the hell realms, and that's plural. And the artist shows people, you know, being eaten alive, boiled alive, sitting in fire, walking through a forest where all the leaves are swords, you know, the good stuff that Dante would be very proud of, right? Then above that, we have the realm of the hungry ghosts. The hungry ghosts are beings that in their previous life were very greedy, and now they've been reborn with giant bellies and very tiny throats, and they can never get their fill. Also in the lower realms is the realm of the asuras, the warring gods. These are always fighting. They seem to have their headquarters in a large 5-sided building just south of Washington, D.C. Also in the lower realms is the animal realm. And the artist has fun drawing deer and rabbits, you know, all the cute little animals. Then we have the human realm. And in the human realm, the artist draws people doing things like eating and sleeping and farming and, you know, the usual stuff. And then up at the top are the heavenly realms. And I do mean plural. There are, I think, 26 of them. Hard to remember. And there, you know, it's the usual things you find in heaven. People sitting on clouds. They're not playing harps. They're playing lutes. They're eating ambrosia. You know, the good stuff you do in heaven. All right? But the important is the very outer ring, because that depicts the 12 links of dependent origination. So up at the very top, you have ignorance. And ignorance is depicted as an old blind person trying to make their way through the forest. Because we are ignoring what's really going on, it's hard to make any progress. Arising dependent on ignorance are sankharas. Sankhara is one of the most important words to understand in all of Pali. You see it translated many different ways. Mental formations, mental activities, karmic formations, compounded things, fabrications is what Tanisaro Bhikkhu uses. That's pretty good. And Santikaro uses concoctions. All right. The word sankhara means making together. So it's anything that's constructed. So this table, right, wooden table, it's a constructed thing, so it's a sankhara. The smartphone, yeah, that's a sankhara. The bell, the candle, a person, all of these things that are created are sankharas. So I tend to use the words fabrication or concoction when I'm talking about sankhara. And so sankharas are dependent on ignorance. That's a little bit hard to see. I mean, did the table arise out of ignorance? What the Buddha is eventually going to point out is that what we're doing is chopping up the holistic universe into a bunch of bits and pieces. We are the fabricator. We are the concoctor. The universe is not made up of a bunch of independent pieces. Everything is just streams of dependently arising phenomena interacting. And those streams are interacting, and it's not like this stream goes along by itself until it interacts and stops. The streams are bouncing off of each other all along the way. It's quite a network of happenings there. But it's a bit too much for our little pea brains to take in all at once. So in order to handle it, we chop it up into bits and pieces, and we start ignoring the real depths of what's going on, the fact that there's nothing but streams of dependently arising phenomena interacting. Dependent on sankharas is consciousness. Consciousness in Buddhism, early Buddhism, always has an object. There's no such thing as objectless consciousness. So, yeah, this makes sense. If you're conscious, you're conscious of something. Maybe you're just conscious of, you know, the thoughts in your head, or of being really sleepy or something. Maybe you're conscious only of the dream that's happening. Or maybe you're conscious of the ice hockey game and how everybody's positioned, and, well, never mind. All right. So dependent on consciousness is nama rupa. Oh, so sankharas are depicted in this wheel as a potter sitting at a wheel making pots. They've got a wheel that they kick, it spins around, and they make the pots. And some of the pots are very nice, and some are broken, and some are misshapen. So good concoctions, good fabrications, and not such good fabrications. And then consciousness is depicted as a monkey swinging through the trees, grabbing one branch and then another branch. You might have had some contact with this monkey mind at some point in the recent past. Okay? And then dependent on consciousness is mind and body, nama rupa. Mind and body is depicted as two people in a boat. One is standing up and is poling the boat along, and the other is lying down and is just along for a ride. So, which one's mind and which one's body? I'm going to leave this for you to investigate. All right? Now, it's really obvious that the one who's poling the boat along is determining where the boat is going. That's the guy in charge. So, who's in charge, your mind or your body? Get concentrated and think about this. You can tell me in your next interview, or if you don't have another interview, you can tell me later. All right? This is a very important investigation. It's called the delineation of mind and matter. So, yeah, realizing that mind has its functions and the body has its functions, and they're not the same. Arising dependent on mind and body are the six senses. And that's depicted as a house with five windows and a door, the five windows being the five external senses and the door being the mind. Arising dependent on the senses is sense contact, and that's a couple embracing. Arising dependent on sense contact is Vedana. Vedana is depicted as a man having arrows shot into his eyes. Unpleasant Vedana. Right? Arising from Vedana is craving. Craving is depicted as a very fat person sitting at a table that has lots of food on it. Arising dependent on craving is clinging. And clinging is depicted as someone picking fruit and putting it into baskets that are so full that the new fruit simply rolls onto the ground. Arising dependent on clinging is becoming. And becoming is depicted as a pregnant woman. Arising dependent on becoming is birth. And birth is depicted as a mother with a newborn. And arising dependent on birth is death, and that's depicted as a corpse. So, what does it mean? What is this all about? Why is this important? Well, there are numerous interpretations of what this means. The orthodox interpretation found in the commentaries, in the Visuddhimagga in particular, is that these 12 links represent three lifetimes. In your previous life, you were ignorant, and the sankharas are interpreted as karmic formations. In other words, you acted, and it produced results. And because of that, now in your present life, you have a certain type of consciousness and mind and body, which has senses, which gets sense contacts, which, if you're not careful, has cravings and clingings. That's the current life. And then your next life is becoming, birth, and death. So the three-lifetime model of dependent origination. There's only a bunch of stuff wrong with that model. In the first place, I don't think that's what the Buddha was talking about at all. There's not a single sutta that talks about dependent origination in terms of three lifetimes. None. There is one sutta that talks about it in terms, possibly, of two lifetimes, but that sutta appears to be somewhat of a later composition. I personally have serious doubts that it's actually from the Buddha. There's also a very serious flaw in a three-lifetime model of dependent origination. So remember, ignorance is in your previous life, all right? Now, there are a number of suttas where the Buddha says, with the ceasing of ignorance, there's the ceasing of sankharas. With the ceasing of sankharas, there's the ceasing of consciousness. With the ceasing of consciousness, all the way up to with the ceasing of birth, is the ceasing of old age, sickness, and death, and all the rest of the dukkha. All right, so the way permanently out of dukkha is to cease being ignorant. But ignorance is in your previous life. How are you going to uproot the ignorance of your previous life? I mean, you probably don't even remember your previous life, let alone be able to change your previous life. That's really stupid. The Buddha would not make a mistake like that. All right? So I don't think that's what he was talking about. Let's just take the three-lifetime model and from a scholastic viewpoint say that's orthodox Theravadin, but it's useless. All right? Another interpretation of dependent origination is the moment-to-moment interpretation of dependent origination. That is, instead of it taking three lifetimes to go through the 12 links, you go through it actually with every sense contact. This is taught by Ajahn Buddhadasa, one of the great Thai forest masters of the previous century. He has a book called Practical Dependent Origination. Sometimes you can find copies of the book on the web that you can just download, and then it disappears, and then it comes back again. I don't know if it's there now, but you can order an actual physical book from Thailand, and I have the information for doing that. You have got to send an international money order to Thailand.
Yeah, I have some of those books home, so if someone wants to loan a copy, I can send by post.
Okay, all right, there you go. There's going to be a new book out on Ajahn Buddhadasa's teachings on dependent origination. His translator, Santikaro, has completed the book, and it's with Wisdom Publications, and it's going to be out soon. It's going to be have been out soon for 2 years soon. Hopefully it comes out in the spring. I talked to Santikaro this past spring, and he was hoping it would come out next spring. So that will be nice when it's available. Basically, the moment-to-moment understanding of dependent origination is that you have a mind and body that's conscious, and it has senses, and you get sense contacts, and this generates Vedana. And if you're not careful, the pleasant Vedana lead to craving, and the unpleasant Vedana lead to the craving for the absence of. And then the craving leads to clinging, becoming birth and death. Now, it's kind of curious that you have birth right near the end. Usually you have birth at the beginning, right? You have death at the end, but now you got a whole bunch of stuff and then birth. So what's going on? Well, what Ajahn Buddhadasa is saying that's being born is the sense of self. All right, we're giving birth to the ego. I'll give you an example. Let's say you've never had a mango, and you go to the grocery store, and you're in the produce section, and you see a sign that says mangoes. And you go, oh, I've heard of mangoes. They're supposed to be good. You poke around, you pick up one you think is ripe, and you take it home. And hopefully you put all the other groceries away, all right? And now you're going to eat the mango. And you figure out you have to peel it, and you make a big mess, because that's what happens when you attack a mango, right? And so now, finally, you cut off a piece, and you've got a piece of mango in your hands. You are conscious, you have a mind and body that's conscious, and it's got senses, particularly the tongue. And you put the mango in your mouth, and it's contact, and it's Vedana, it's pleasant Vedana. Oh, this is good, I'm going to have some more, and you eat the whole mango, right? This is really great. I'm going to get mangoes every time I go to the store. In fact, I know my friends, Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, they've never had mangoes. I'm going to turn them on to mangoes. So you go back to the store, you get another mango. You go see your friends, you turn them on to mangoes, and they're like, cool, this is great, wonderful. They think you're a really cool person, and you think you're a really cool person. You've just given birth to the mango bringer, right? And every time you go see your friends, you bring them a mango, and they're like, cool, a mango, until about the 10th time, and then they're like, what's with all the mangoes? Uh-oh, death of the mango bringer. Right? So we're busy taking in sensory input, And then we're reacting to that, getting the Vedana, and then getting caught in the craving and clinging. And in so doing, we become something and give birth to a sense of self. But this sense of self isn't real, and so it winds up passing away. Okay, and this is what the moment-to-moment dependent origination is about. This idea of there are senses that get sense contacts, and that produces Vedana, and then what we need to do is get in there and not get caught in the craving, is the same as the second and third noble truth, right? Second noble truth, craving leads to dukkha, right? And the third noble truth, you don't want dukkha, don't crave. So for a moment-to-moment working with your senses, one of the things to do is notice the Vedana. That's the second establishment of mindfulness. We've already talked about that. And you can enjoy the pleasant, but don't get caught up in the craving and clinging. Because if you're into the craving, you've set yourself up so that dukkha can arise. If you don't get caught up in the craving, then yeah, dukkha doesn't have a chance. Now, sometimes the question arises, what's really the difference between craving and clinging? Craving is focused on the object. There's something I want to get. And clinging is focused on the subject. I got it and it's mine. All right? So craving is, I don't have it, I want to get it. And clinging is, I got it and it's mine. So craving is, there's a thing out there that I want. And clinging is, I am the one who's got it. And all of this is giving rise to a self. The self is the craver, and the self is the clinger. And because selves aren't really what's going on, that craving and clinging winds up leading to dukkha. Now, this is a very useful way of looking at dependent origination, but I still don't think that's what the Buddha was talking about. Right, I think indeed he was talking about the fact that, yeah, sense contacts lead to Vedana, and Vedana, if you're not careful, can lead to craving and clinging, and that can wind up causing dukkha. Certainly you find that in enough suttas. But what about this birth and becoming and all this other stuff in there? What's really going on? What did the Buddha have in mind when he first started teaching this? Well, it turns out, I mentioned this before, in the fifth collection of suttas, the Kutika Nikaya, there's a small collection called the Sutta Nipata, 72 suttas, something like that, divided into five books. And book four of that collection is called the Athakavagga, the Book of Eights. And the suttas in that collection, that Book of Eights, there's 16 of them, appear to have been composed very early in the Buddha's ministry, probably in the first three years of his teaching, because they show the Buddha as a solitary wanderer. There's no fellow monks, there's no monasteries or anything like that. There's just this one really sharp guy wandering around and having conversations with people. And in this book, book four of the Sutta Nipata, Sutta number 11 is entitled Quarrels and Disputes. And someone asked the Buddha, why do quarrels and disputes arise? And the Buddha answers, because people find things endearing. Why do people find things endearing? Because they're desirable. Why do people find things desirable? Because things are pleasant or not pleasant. Why do we find things pleasant or not pleasant? Why does that happen? Because of sense contact. Where does sense contact come from? It comes from nama rupa, having a mind and body. And then the question changes. How does rupa disappear? This is very different from all the other questions and all the other teachings on dependent origination. The answer is very cryptic. How does rupa disappear? I mean, first off, why do we want rupa to disappear? And the Buddha says, rupa disappears when your sanya, your perceptions, your conceptualization is not ordinary, it's not abnormal, it's not of things that have stopped, and it hasn't stopped. Which is like, what? what is he talking about here? Right? What he's saying is you have to look at the world in a different way. Our normal way of conceiving of things as a table, I mean, look at this, it's a table, right? I mean, what else could it be? Well, if you're a troll, you could sit in a seat there, might be a little, you know, bus shelter maybe, right? Bus shelter for trolls. Well, no, actually it's just trees, right? The trees were growing in the forest and somebody cut them down and they put them into this shape and made it a table. Of course, if it's really cold and you need some firewood, it's firewood, right? We just call it a table because that's how we're using it. It doesn't have any intrinsic tableness within it, right? So, this first sutta on dependent origination, which is looking at basically why quarrels and disputes arise, is saying, and that's dukkha, obviously. It's saying dukkha arises because we find things endearing. That's pretty close to clinging. I mean, you cling to the things you find endearing. And we find them endearing because they're desirable. That's close to craving, right? And we find them desirable because of pleasant and unpleasant. That's very close to vedana. And this pleasant, unpleasant arises when there's sense contact. That's exactly the same as sense contact. And sense contact is dependent on nama rupa, name and form. That's exactly what it says in the other ways of teaching it, except that the senses are stuck in there. And then there's that strange question of how to get form to disappear. And it says, perceive the world differently. See it not in the usual way of solid objects. See it in terms of there being nothing but streams of dependently arising phenomena interacting. See that there's nothing but soda pie. Now, that particular sutta doesn't talk about that. We'll have to get to that tomorrow night, all right? But basically, all that we get is one should look at the world in a way that's different from the ordinary way of looking at it. But this sequence of dukkha as quarrels and disputes, being dependent on endearing, being dependent on desirable, being dependent on pleasant and unpleasant, being dependent on sense contact, being dependent on nama rupa, name and form, seems to be the earliest description of dependent origination. And it certainly has nothing to do with multiple lifetimes. It's just looking at some things and trying to figure out how they arise. It's looking at necessary conditions. Remember that first night I talked about necessary conditions? A necessary condition for the light to be on is the switch be turned on. Right? It doesn't make the light come on. It's just a necessary condition. A necessary condition is the wires be intact, the generating plant be pumping out electricity. Those are necessary as well. But what the Buddha was doing was looking for necessary conditions. In particular, he was looking for necessary conditions he could manipulate. And the craving is one that we can turn off. If you can see the world in a different way, then maybe it's not so desirable and you don't get caught in the craving and clinging. And this is really what the Buddha is teaching here. is, all right, here's some necessary conditions. And yeah, we get sense contacts, and there's the pleasant and the unpleasant from that. But don't let it go off into craving, because if it goes off into craving, you could very well wind up experiencing dukkha. So then the question arises, well, if the Buddha started out with quarrels and disputes and endearing and desirable and pleasant and unpleasant, how did we get all these other words in there? And where did all the things like birth and becoming and sankharas and the six senses, how did all of that get in there? Well, it turns out in the Upanishads, which is the spiritual literature at the time of the Buddha for the Brahmins and some of the wanderers of other sects, in there, actually in the earliest forms, the Vedas, there is the Vedic hymn of creation. You might have heard of the Rig Veda. Right? There are other Vedas as well. There are three of them. And in one of them, I'm not sure which one, there's the Vedic hymn of creation. And the Vedic hymn of creation talks about, out of ignorance arise sankharas. Out of sankharas rise consciousness. All the way up through and out of birth arises death. Those 12 words are part of the Vedic hymn of creation. At some point, the words got changed from what we know as quarrels and disputes, endearing, desirable, pleasant and unpleasant, to death, old age, sickness and death, clinging, craving, and vedana, which matches the Vedic hymn of creation. And then all the other verses of the hymn, all the other words got stuck in there, and various interpretations got tried to apply what was going on. So I think part of what we have here is that the Buddha's earliest teachings on it got distorted as the Vedic hymn of creation. Those words got inserted in there and more things showed up. And this is part of what makes understanding dependent origination difficult. I found it very helpful to look at this very early sutta. And basically what the Buddha is saying is there's a general principle in the universe. This arises dependent on that. If that doesn't happen, this doesn't happen. This is the this-that conditionality that he was also talking about that long time ago when he was thinking about not teaching. It's difficult for a generation addicted to their lifestyle to see this-that conditionality dependent origination. Now, this-that conditionality has lots of implications, including eventually sotapai, that there's nothing but streams of dependently arising phenomena interacting, that's all that we find. I think I'm going to stop here for tonight. This is quite dense. The key thing to think about here is that, all right, we find dependent origination in the suttas. It's actually very important. The key parts of it are that with sense contacts, there arises vedana. And if you're not careful, you start craving for the pleasant and craving for the absence of the unpleasant. And that craving can lead to clinging, and that can lead you eventually to dukkha. All right? That's the key parts of dependent origination. That seems to be what was really the most important part for the Buddha in the earliest sutta, and in his teaching of the Four Noble Truths, he's talking about dukkha and craving and how they interact. And that basically he's investigating the world and finding lots of relationships where something is a necessary condition for something else. And we'll go on tomorrow night talking about this in a bit more detail that hopefully is not quite so dense. But I'll stop here and see if there are any questions or comments.